So the Winter Olympics, yes, they are in full swing. I'm sure you're all glued to the screen. The film My Tonya is out and about in Australian theatres. I am such a dim-witted and credulous person that I hadn't put those two things together as some sort of a marketing coincidence, but that must have been the plan. Figure skating, yes, it is having a moment. Skating costumes, now that is a thing. This is where, almost like nowhere else, function meets form, and it's extraordinary form and remarkably testing function. Let's explore that conjunction. We're joined by Patty Huntington, fashion journalist, and by Jennifer Johnson. And Jennifer, coming to us via Skype from the US, was the costume designer for I, Tonya. Welcome both.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Jennifer, this coincidence of which I speak, I mean, suddenly our screens are full, big and small, of figure skating and the frocks that attend it.
It takes so much athleticism and grit and muscular power and determination and absolute sheer insane bravery to be a great ice skater. It's very dangerous. And it's an interesting combination of showgirl meets stunt person. I can't think of, you know, besides Cirque du Soleil, but this is a sport, you know, that you can medal in that involves crystals and lace and spandex that stretches in weird ways and a blade on your foot that could slice most of it into
ribbons. Yes, I mean Patty. Patty, it's also been a thing which has attracted some of the big names of design.
It has indeed. I mean, Vera Wang was actually inducted into the U.S. Skating Hall of Fame for her 20-year contribution. She dressed Nancy Kerrigan. And there's also been Christian Lacroix, who dressed famous French skater, and Roberto Cavalli, others as well. So I think designers sort of, emerged really in the 1980s when designers, you know, became big names. I mean, before that there were couturiers, and I'm not sure there were many couturiers who dressed ice skaters. I could be wrong. And, I mean, up until I think it was the 1976, in the 70s, one of the Olympics there was considered one of the last ones where people actually made their own costumes. After that, the professionals moved in.
Well, that takes us neatly, doesn't it, Jennifer, to the story of Tonya Harding, I mean, making your own costumes. Now, which is this really interesting detail of your work in this film. And it's a film that, of course, everybody must see because it is wonderful. Look, before we get into her clothes, tell us a little bit about her story.
There's so many interesting things. Is that she, you know, she came from very poor working class upbringing and started skating probably when she was about three and had an amazing kind of knack to skate beyond her years. And her mom saw that avenue, that this would be something that she would be great at, and convinced a coach named Diane to coach and sponsor her. And Diane was a very rich society woman and really took her under her wing. But before that, Tonya's mother made all of her costumes. She still made her costumes up until about Tonya was maybe a teenager, and then Tonya started making her costumes herself up until about the Olympics.
You, of course, were making the costumes, which in the film Margot Robbie as Tonya makes.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting sort of deconstruction.
It's interesting kind of material choices that you would make, because you had to pay attention to what was professional, what was not professional. So, for instance, when she lands the 91 Nationals, which was a huge event, and that's when she did the triple axel for the first time, won the nationals. She made that costume herself, where a lot of other skaters either had proper sponsorship or a designer, or they had money. And even though Diane had sort of groomed her outside of skating and shopped for her clothing for her outside appearances and tours, she was still making her own costumes. And I think a part of that was not only a lack of money, but I really believe that Tonya is so self-possessed that she really wanted to design her own costumes, that she knew how she wanted to look, and no one could tell her what to do.
And it's
something that I admire so much of her, voice.
Amazing strength. Well, let's hear a bit about that, because there's a tension in her career and in the film where she is being judged because of her appearance, because it's slightly rough and ready. Here's a bit from the movie I, Tonya, where Margot Robbie, as Tonya Harding, skates up to the judge as bold as brass, and she demands to know why she's not getting the scores that she thinks she deserves.
4.8.
How do I get a fair shot here?
We also judge on presentation.
Patty, the costumes in the film have that sort of rough and readiness, and then the costumes we're seeing from the Olympics have that extraordinary glitz and glam. But wow, being able to put that together into something so sort of hyper functional, so athletically demanding, that for a designer must be an extraordinary thing.
An absolute challenge. I think it was just described, it's a showgirl meets stunt person. And, I mean, the routines go for 4 minutes, but, you know, I mean, in fact, we had a Korean skater on Sunday who had a wardrobe malfunction. Her dress became unhooked. And, I mean, whether that contributed to her score, I don't know how she managed to make the entire thing. But, look, this is one of the reasons why you see so much of the, it's called illusion netting or illusion mesh, where you might have, I mean, don't forget the International Skating Union has strict rules, and you're not allowed to have too much of a sort of an appearance of nudity.
They have really strict rules, and they're so detailed.
They are detailed. Many skaters sort of really push that. And you see a lot of, you know, strapless designs or there's the illusion that it's actually strapless, but underneath it's all sort of illusion netting. But that does come undone. And things like, I think it's called the Beilman spin. Correct me if I'm wrong, if I've mispronounced that. That's where the skater puts sort of one leg in the air behind her and grabs it with both hands and spins. And that's considered to be the most risky when it comes to a wardrobe
malfunction. This is why Janet Jackson and was never a figure skater, I think.
That's right.
Particular spin.
That's right. So, I mean, you know, it's extraordinary athleticism. And, you know, in some cases, I mean, elements of the female skater's outfit or even her hair, like, you know, a fringe or a bead could obscure the face of the male skater. And, I mean, I think that's quite risky as well. And also, if there's too many elements that can fall off, like a fringe or an embellishment, they lose a point if it falls on the ice.
Jennifer, you must have studied hard and in great detail to bring all that, to life, to be aware of all that, and in the specific case too of how Tonya Harding approached all that.
The material choices that she made were really interesting in that it reflected what she had access to. So,
give us an example.
In that 91 Nationals turquoise costume, when she lands the triple, the turquoise costume that has these knife cut leaves that are lined in silver, the spandex is one stretch jumbo, very thick, kind of not the most flattering type of spandex. And that's what she would have had access to. And when I met her, which was at our premiere, so it was after the fact, she said, "How did you get a hold of my costume?" And I said, "Well, I wish I had the luxury to have your costumes." No, we recreated them. And she said, "You nailed the spandex because it was so thick and bunched up on the arms. And that was something that was a little bit not as professional and as fashion forward or technical as some of the other skaters had access to." We had a very funny moment when we were shooting that triple axel. We were in super slow motion. You could see it on the monitor, and one of the leaves flew off the dress. And did so in slow motion, and I sort of yelled, "Come back."
there was no second take on that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, because even though the costumes, you know, at least that costume is meant to look homemade, they're very expensive to create, and all the crystals and the Swarovski crystals, and it's quite expensive. And then as she goes on, then she goes to the Olympics, and she does have a professional seamstress making her costumes, and you can see it, you know, the shoulder pads, it's a little more structured, the spandex and the materials are nicer, but she's still pushing the envelope of what the panel, what the judges would deem tasteful. So look at Nancy, and Nancy's almost wearing an evening gown,
yes.
You know, Vera Wang, incredibly tasteful. And I think there's like 30,000, 20,000, some crazy amount, I'm probably exaggerating, amount of crystals on her costumes, and that would indicate the amount of money it costs to make that costume.
The technical side of this, Patty, is interesting too over time, in the way in which fabrics have developed, and obviously something like figure skating would use the sort of the highest possible fabric technology to get that performance.
Yeah, in the beginning they didn't. I mean, the Olympic Games started in 24 and they essentially competed in day wear and mid-calf length dresses and tuxedo, and the guys in tuxedos and heavy jumpers. I think it was Sonja Heaney, the Norwegian, who won three consecutive gold medals at the Winter Olympics and then went on to a sensational Hollywood career. She apparently sort of turned the skating world upside down with her much shorter dresses, and she also wore white boots, which apparently, I gather, before they wore sort of, tan boots. In the 1940s, fabric shortages also, I think, assisted, hemlines to rise. And, of course, out and about, hemlines were rising. But, yeah, spandex and lycra sort of made a big difference. But just on the sort of the taste issue, that's true. I mean, Nancy Kerrigan and also Nancy Kwan, who was dressed by Vera Wang, ushering in a sort of a minimalist sort of era, I guess, with these beautiful sleek dresses. Nancy Kwan in particular didn't want anything around her neck, and she was wearing, apparently a lot of skaters were sort of had their arms covered before her. But interestingly, in the 1994 Winter Games, artistic merit became the tiebreaker between Nancy Kerrigan and Ukraine's Oksana Baul, who was wearing a very kind of a fluffy pink outfit to match her music, which was the Pink Panther, and she won the gold and Nancy took the silver. Mm. So perhaps minimalism didn't pay off on that day.
Yes, we made Oksana Baul's Pink Panther costume and we made Nancy's crystal Vera Wang. We had to, because there's a podium sequence when Nancy looks pissed off that she's gotten the silver
right.
and Oksana's gotten, but it's so funny because you just see the sleeve of the Pink Panther, you see right. the marabou sleeve, and it was such a cute costume and it was very
all that effort
funny.
For just a sleeve.
It's just a sleeve in the movie, I know.
Jennifer, I can't let this go without complimenting you on the most extraordinary piece of costuming, I think, in I, Tonya, which is the jacket that Alice and Janney wears with a parrot sitting on the shoulder. Alice and Janney, of course, who was sensational as Tonya Harding's mother. That's quite a piece of work.
Yes, raccoon fur. It's raccoon fur coat, and it's really based on the truth. There's a great documentary that Tonya's high school friend made of Tonya, and there's footage of her mother speaking to camera, sitting in her living room with a raccoon fur coat and a little bird walking around the coat. So that was something that I can't take credit for as far as the idea. That was all Lavona.
You brought it scintillatingly to life. And for that, we thank you. And for your time too in chatting with us, we thank you as well. Jennifer Johnson, costume designer, the woman who brought I, Tonya to life, the story of Tonya Harding. Patty Huntington with us too, fashion journalist. And this is Blueprint for Living here on RN.